From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On the last full day of President Bush's state visit to Britain, what was to be a day of politics and protest in London began with terror and tragedy in Istanbul.
I can see the HSBC Bank from the roof of the school. The entire facade, all the glasswork is gone.
There's so much confusion, you know, we're all in a shock.
There were body parts of people out front, two or three people just out front. We didn't have a chance.
Two massive suicide truck bombs ripped through the heart of Turkey's largest city today, killing 27 and injuring at least 450. The explosions came just moments apart, first in front of the Istanbul office of the giant UK-based Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, and then at the British consulate. British Consul General Roger Short was among the dead. The attacks took place as President Bush met today with Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair. Standing side by side at a joint press conference this morning, the two leaders condemned the latest terrorist bombings.
The nature of the terrorist enemy is evident once again. We see their contempt, their utter contempt for innocent life. They hate freedom. They hate free nations. Great Britain, America, and other free nations are united today in our grief and united in our determination to fight and defeat this evil wherever it is found.
This terrorism is the 21st century threat. It is a war that strikes at the heart of all that we hold dear. And there is only one response that is possible or rational: to meet their will to inflict terror with a greater will to defeat it, to confront their philosophy of hate with our own of tolerance and freedom, and to challenge their desire to frighten us, divide us, unnerve us, with an unshakable unity of purpose, to stand side by side with the United States of America and with our other allies in the world, to rid our world of this evil once and for all.
President Bush and Prime Minister Blair at a joint press conference today as the two men met at Blair's Downing Street residence. London braced itself for anti-Bush protests that drew an estimated 100,000 people through the streets to Trafalgar Square. In a moment, we'll go to London, where On Point senior producer Graham Griffith has spent the day at the heart of the protest march. But first, we go to Istanbul for the latest on the devastation caused by today's truck bombings there. Owen Matthews is Istanbul correspondent for Newsweek magazine. I asked him to describe the scene in Istanbul as night fell on the city.
It's really a terrible mess, a very dramatic damage inflicted on the British Consul General and likewise in Levant in the business district. In fact, there's been a pall of dust over the whole area throughout the day, and now as the forensic teams are working under arc lights, it has created a very eerie effect. The damage is very extensive to the consulate. Two gatehouses immediately on either side of the main gates have been completely demolished. They've just vanished. And the chances of anyone surviving who is directly in those buildings seem to have been nil.
Owen, who died? Who was wounded in these blasts? Can you characterize?
There's two different social groups, if we're talking about the Turks. There's the Beyoğlu, which is the historic central district where the British consulate is located, is a pretty poor area. It's inhabited by a lot of artisans there. There's a big fish market. A lot of Istanbulis come there to shop, some cafes and restaurants. It's a very, very busy area, especially in the middle of the day. It's near the main pedestrian thoroughfare, which runs through the heart of the European part of Istanbul. In Levant, which is a different sociology there, you have a lot of business people, you have a lot of professionals working in that area. It's all high-rises and offices, a very different type of place. And as we know, the vast majority of the victims have been Turkish Muslims. We still don't know exactly how many British casualties there are. There may still be some people unaccounted for under the rubble, but we certainly know that the British Consul General, Roger Short, was killed immediately, it seems, by the blast.
The reports we've heard, Owen, seem to indicate that the blast was timed to coincide with the arrival of Roger Short at the British consul there. How were these blasts carried out?
That's difficult to say, actually, Tom, because for a long time, as a matter of course, there are barriers put up outside, just ordinary traffic barriers put up outside the British Consulate General, which stops cars parking. In other words, that stream of traffic is constantly moving past. In order for an attack to hit the Consul General, it would have had to have been extremely carefully planned. They would have had to observe his itinerary and actually followed his car up the hill and to the Consulate General. Now, that suggests a degree of planning which is really extraordinary. In other words, they would have had to have driven past, not stopped and waited, but driven past exactly at the moment they got out of his car on a one-lane highway in heavy traffic. I don't know whether that's possible. It may have just been a tragic coincidence.
Owen, how are the Turks in Istanbul absorbing these two new deadly blasts?
The blasts today really have caused a wide degree of consternation and shock, because already the city was reeling from last week's blasts at the synagogues, and there was really, with these latest attacks, Istanbul is taking on something of the air of a city under siege. There's a lot of very nervous people, very confused people. Most Turks considered Al-Qaeda, Islamic radicalism, Islamic terrorism, to be a purely Arab phenomenon, something that happens elsewhere. They didn't expect it to come, to be brought home in such devastating and deadly effect to their own home city, and they're wondering what they've done to be targeted.
No group, as far as we know, has claimed responsibility, but the British Foreign Minister, Jack Straw, said today that he thought the blasts had all the hallmarks of the kind of terrorism practiced by Al-Qaeda. How are the blasts being interpreted? Less than a week ago, two Jewish synagogues in Istanbul bombed. 25 people died there. Are these seen as connected? Are these seen as a message to the UK as Bush and Blair meet? What's the interpretation Turks are giving?
The first part of your question, certainly the MO, the modus operandi, is very similar. The blasts were conducted in a very similar way. Car bombs have never been used in the long and tragically varied history of terrorism in Turkey. There's been a lot of terrorism in this country, but there's never been this kind of truck bomb, car bomb attack. So that innovation is a hallmark of Al-Qaeda and has been a tactic used by Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists in Afghanistan and obviously more commonly in Iraq. As for what the Turks are making of it, I think it's very clear that this message is aimed at London and Washington more than at Ankara. I think the Turks very unfortunately found themselves to be a target of convenience. They're a Western allied country which finds itself in a very bad neighborhood, and they just discovered how vulnerable that position makes them and how much the price of their alignment with the West, how high that price can be.
And Owen, I know it's still very early hours after this blast, but can you anticipate a likely impact on Turkish policy, Turkish foreign policy?
I don't think the current government has much of a choice but to stick with its alignment with the West. As we know from history, revolutionaries, radicals hate moderates, and the current government in Ankara is a moderate Islamist government. It has its roots in political Islam, but what it's achieved over the last year has demonstrated that religion doesn't have to be an issue in politics. It's surprising. They've shown absolute moderation. There hasn't been a major part of political debate. It certainly hasn't led to any friction, much less violence. So I think the current Turkish government is deeply hated by Islamists because they show a way forward, a way in which Islamic values can be very easily reconciled with Western civilization, with European culture, and so on.
Owen Matthews, I know that the British Consul General Roger Short was a friend of yours. I'm sorry for that loss today, and we thank you for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure.
Owen Matthews, Istanbul correspondent for Newsweek magazine. He spoke with us from Istanbul. The blasts threw a sad shadow over the second day of President Bush's state visit, but they did not stop an estimated 100,000 protesters from marching across London. The march peaked in Trafalgar Square, where protesters pulled down a mocking statue of President Bush.
I have the privilege and the honor to do the countdown, and I'd like you to join with me. Let's begin right now.
While protesters marched outside, inside the Prime Minister's residence at No. 10 Downing Street, George Bush and Tony Blair met for a day of talks on AIDS, steel tariffs, British prisoners at Guantanamo, and the war on terror. Blair has been George Bush's staunchest ally, the kind of partner you want when serious work needs doing, as President Bush said yesterday. America is fortunate to call Britain our closest friend in the world, the president added. But is that friendship only Blair deep? Tonight on Point, Britain, the American ally. And the future of the U.S.-UK alliance beyond Tony Blair, is the U.S.-UK relationship an essential one for Britain, for America? And what do you see when Tony Blair and George Bush stand side by side on the world stage? Is this partnership knocking down terrorism or provoking it? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now live from London is Graham Griffith, On Point senior producer. He's been in London this week and spent the day out on the street following the protests today. Good evening and welcome. Very late there, Graham Griffith.
Hello, Tom. Good to hear from you.
Good to have you with us from London tonight. We want to hear all about it in just a moment. Joining us from Washington is Gerard Baker, Washington Bureau Chief for the Financial Times. Gerard Baker, thank you for joining us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
And with me in the studio is Richard Heffernan, Professor of Government and Politics at the Open University outside London and a visiting scholar at the Center for European Studies at Harvard. He's author of a number of books on British politics, including New Labour and Thatcherism. Good evening and welcome, Richard Heffernan.
Nice to be here.
Graham Griffith, to you first in London. Give us a sense of what you saw in the streets today. It was not the crowd of 1 million that poured out in advance of the war in Iraq in anti-war protest, but it was a very substantial, and we just heard there, a very vocal crowd. What did it look like? What was the feeling?
Well, it was thousands and thousands of people, a real sea of people. In the Stop the War Coalition organizers are saying 200,000. Scotland Yard puts the estimate at 100,000. And as you mentioned, they culminated their march in Trafalgar Square, but before that they went up past Downing Street, past Parliament, waving placards and banners, mostly saying simply Bush and a splatter of red paint on them. We also saw the statue come down, the effigy of President Bush.
And Graham, this was a kind of mocking reenactment of the pull-down of the Saddam Hussein
statue. April 9th event that we all remember so well. One thing that you may not notice on the TV screens is that there's a little effigy of Tony Blair in the president's pocket, fittingly. And that was one of the themes of the crowd, Tony Blair being referred to as President Bush's poodle and lackey throughout. But Tom, all in all, the protests were peaceful and I'd have to say almost celebratory.
Celebrating what? Celebrating simply the fact that they were together in the streets?
I think so. It was just a very sort of festive atmosphere. And, you know, as I did my best imitation of a salmon and worked my way through the crowd opposite their march, I felt a little bit like I was walking through a kind of a carnival for the British left. There was a real atmosphere of comradeship there. They were certainly enjoying themselves. The relationship between, and you may have seen these numbers, about 5,100 police that were surrounding the parade. The relationship was very cordial throughout. Of course, you had your events on the margins. You did see, as the night wore on, you saw some people burning American flags. But those were very much a smaller part of the crowd. And it just overall was an atmosphere of people who were, I think in some ways, just happy that this big event that they've been waiting for quite a while was actually here.
Graham, we have to take a short break. Before we do, Richard Heffernan, you must have seen something of what went on in London today. What did you make of it? Was it as much as you expected, less? What did it say to you about British attitudes toward the president?
Well, it was a very large crowd, particularly for a midweek demonstration. We're quite fond of demonstrations in Britain. We've had 8 in the last year, 7 of which have been about the war. And I'm intrigued by your correspondent's suggestion that it was a happy crowd, because my feeling was that had the visit been cancelled, many of the protesters would have been horribly disappointed not to be able to make their point. I think it's an anti-Bush demonstration, but it's also an anti-Blair demonstration. I think that it's a reaction to the policy that has been followed by both the United Kingdom and the United States.
Gerard Baker, I'm sorry, Richard Heffernan, stand by. We have to take a short break. Gerard Baker will come to you in just a moment. Listeners, we're talking tonight about the American ally and how firm that alliance is beyond Tony Blair. You can join the conversation. What do you make of Bush in London, of the protests in London? How important is the special relationship between the U.S. and the U.K.? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the American ally, the United Kingdom, and how firm that alliance is beyond Tony Blair. You can join the conversation tonight. How important is the special relationship between the U.S. and the U.K. now? Does public opinion in Britain influence your opinion in America or not? And what if British support for American foreign policy is only Blair deep? What does that mean? May come next. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight in the studio by Richard Heffernan, professor of government and politics at the Open University outside London, a visiting scholar at the Center for European Studies at Harvard right now. From Washington by Gerard Baker, Washington bureau chief for the Financial Times, and our own Graham Griffith has been in London this week. He spent the day on the street with the protesters. Here's a bit of tape from that day on the street in London. He spoke with one of the protesters and asked her what her message was for the American people today.
Don't lose their friendship over it, because it's just the politicians. It's not the real people.
If you had a chance to talk to George Bush, what would you say to him?
Like I say to many American friends, after September the 11th. Why? Why did they do it? Just think why. The domination of their politicians that are trying to dominate all the countries throughout the world. Just in the same way as the British did with their empire years ago. But this time, I don't know, it's global.
A protester in London today, talking with our own senior producer, Graham Griffith, who was there. Gerard Baker, start us in here. First of all, how do you see this visit by President Bush to London this week as having unfolded? There was a lot of expectation that it would be a fiasco. Bush seems to have done fairly well in the formal circles that he's run in. But sit back and look at it with us. How's it gone? What does it bode for this alliance?
Well, I think that those last remarks you heard from one of the demonstrators, I think quite reflective in a way of the sort of incoherent sense of just irritation and kind of loss of direction that a lot of British people do feel at the moment. I think actually when we come to look back on this, the far more significant event today will be the events that we saw in Istanbul this morning. Mm-hmm. I think that will turn out to be very, very significant in terms of the development of British public opinion, because it's the first direct terrorist attack on British interests anywhere in the world since the September 11th attacks, and indeed, of course, since the Iraq War. And I think that will be seen to be there will be a response to that and a reaction to that by the British public that will be which will be much more supportive of Tony Blair, much more supportive of what the United States is trying to do. I think this will prove to be quite a significant day, and what will be significant will be the events in Istanbul, not the events on the streets of London.
Richard Heffernan, what do you think? I mean, after all, terrorism is the context that has brought these men, two men, so close together. Today, it struck Britons, this time in Istanbul, first time, as Gerard Baker points out, since 9/11 that's happened. Of course, not a small number died on 9/11. Could this turn the corner? I mean, what we're presented with is a yawning gap between Tony Blair, we have been told, on the one hand, and British public opinion on the other. Might that be narrowing?
I think Gerard's absolutely right. I think that you could tell that by the press conference given by President Bush and Prime Minister Blair today, where they're actually responding only to the events in Istanbul, which have dominated the trip by Bush. I think that this is just another event that illustrates the differences between the United States, the United Kingdom on one hand, and their terrorist opponents on the other. So it is, I think it's right. I think it will solidify British opposition to the terrorists, not necessarily the Bush war on terror. And I think that Blair is demonstrating that the government is four square behind that campaign. And I think the majority of the British people are. We did have 100,000 people marching, of course, but there are 60 million of us.
Yes.
And there was a poll in The Guardian 2 days ago which said 42% welcome, 43% welcome Mr. Bush's visit, and 36% oppose the visit. That's an important a percentage opposing, and we should discuss what that tells us about the way in which the relationship needs to develop and the way in which both allies need to progress. But in terms of having the alliance, I think that's very firm, and I think, sadly, the events of today in Istanbul will solidify that at both the principal level between Blair and Bush, but also in terms of public opinion, which is deeply uneasy about the world in which we find ourselves and wants the principles to respond adequately and properly to it. And that's the concern. It's the style of the campaign against terror, not necessarily the campaign against terror itself, which alarms many people both in the United States and in the United Kingdom.
We'll come back and look at that style, how it's received, the poll numbers around the United States. But Graham Griffith, let me put it to you in London first. Were protesters talking today about the terrible bombings in Istanbul on British targets there as they were protesting against George Bush and his style of war on terror?
Well, no surprise, Tom, but it varied quite a bit. There were several protesters with whom I spoke who hadn't paid attention and didn't know that that had happened. There were others who were using that as a case in point of why the relationship with, as they would say, with Bush and for some of them with the United States, is a harmful relationship for the Brits. They put one woman I spoke with put the blame squarely on President Bush's shoulders for exactly what happened this morning. But as I said, many people weren't aware of it, which was striking, because before I got to Trafalgar Square, that was it between that and the Michael Jackson news really dominated the papers today and the press earlier in the day.
But these were protesters who were out and about and getting ready to do their thing and maybe not watching the news.
Presumably.
Richard Heffernan, help us understand the public opinion and Tony Blair. For some time now, the impression has been given widely that Blair was the ally and that there was this large resistance to the war in Iraq and considerably more behind Tony Blair. Even this Guardian poll that came out this week, I mean, it struck me in a couple of ways. The question was that got the most attention that was asked was whether the British polled believed that the United States is, quote, generally speaking, a force for good, not evil in the world. And 62% agreed with that. Now, you can say that's a majority, and in election terms, a substantial majority. But on the other hand, it's kind of a faint praise, isn't it? Just 62% saying the U.S. is a force for good, not evil?
Well, 15% said it was a force for evil. So the rest are don't-knows. The don't-knows are to be worried. But the 15% are incorrigible, many of whom will have been on the march today, mm-hmm. who are, politically motivated people. It's their right, and they're opposed to the policy of the United States and the policy of the British government in going on with that policy. So we shouldn't be surprised by that. And there was a poll taken earlier in the summer which said 70% of the people thought that the United States and the United Kingdom should have a solid alliance. This has been affected, obviously, by the war in Iraq, but particularly the inability of the American-led occupation to secure the peace. And this maybe explains some of the large discrepancy in that poll that you cite. So, but I don't think that this is an association simply between Blair and Bush. I mean, the special relationship, the phrase itself was coined by Churchill, I believe, back in 1941.
Mm-hmm. In the Roosevelt days.
Yes.
FDR.
And the association predates the Atlantic Charter and Roosevelt and Churchill's association. But the special relationship in the 63 years since then has with the possible exception of Suez in 1956 and disagreements over Vietnam in the late 1960s, the alliance has held firm, irrespective of whether there's a Labour or a Conservative in Downing Street or a Republican or a Democrat in the White House. Mm. And Blair himself has had a very close association during his time in Downing Street between with Mr. Clinton and with Mr. Blair, which is quite extraordinary for some. Mm-hmm. But it demonstrates, it demonstrates that the special association is very strong. And for the large part, with some difficulty at the present time, most British people would accept that. I mean, I think the 15% who think that it's a force for evil are the ones to concentrate on.
Gerard Baker, what do you make of that? How do we interpret Tony Blair's plummeting poll numbers, at least as we read them here? He's since his embrace of the war on terror, things have been politically pretty rocky for him, have they not?
They have, although actually, again, that poll this week, which was very interesting, showed, I think, support for Blair and for Labour generally increasing, and indeed support for what the US and the UK are doing in Iraq increasing. And so I think we are going through quite an interesting phase. And as I said, again, I think today may mark another important day in that shift in public opinion. There's another dimension here, which I think we need to figure out, too, which is the role that Europe plays. Britain has been, for the last 50 years, at least, caught between the magnetic pull of the United States, the power of the United States, and the long traditional cultural, political, historical relationship that we've had with the United States, and the emergence of an increasingly integrated, unified Europe. And we have not been, the British people have not really been able to make up their mind whether or not they really want to engage fully in this European integration project. I think on the whole, the view is that the British people don't want really to engage very fully in it and have been kind of dragged along rather reluctantly. Equally, we go through these phases of being enthusiastic or not so enthusiastic about the so-called special relationship with the United States. There is quite a deep-seated ambivalence in the British character, a kind of bipolarity between the Atlantic relationship and the European relationship, and it's what's very striking this should be remarked upon in the last year or so, is that even as there's no question hostility and suspicion and skepticism about the US and the relationship with the US, and particularly with this administration, has risen, opposition to closer integration to Britain joining, for example, the single European currency, and indeed to Britain ratifying the constitutional process that is currently going on in Europe, has risen, if anything, even more dramatically. So Britain is actually finding itself in this strange, as I say, ambivalence is actually, if anything, is heightening, because we're finding ourselves less enthusiastic about the United States and considerably less enthusiastic about getting into bed with the Europeans.
The fence they're sitting on is getting taller. Tony Blair was supposed to be the kind of interlocutor between the United States and Europe. That role does not seem to have panned out too well, Gerard Baker.
No, that's exactly right. He has tried that. He's very much tried to be the bridge between the United States and Europe. That was, I think, his driving his entire strategies in the run-up to the Iraq War. I think he genuinely believed from the start of that diplomatic process that first of all, I think he completely personally believed in the rightness of the cause of what the United States was doing. And I think he believed that he could persuade, he probably personally would do a better job than the Americans would of persuading the big European powers, France and Germany in particular, to come along and support the United States. He really sees himself as the bridge or the ties that bind the transatlantic relationship together. And that has failed. I mean, that has completely failed. He failed to persuade the French and the Germans to come along with him. He did manage to get many other European countries, but not those two important critical powers. And as I say, he has at the same time alienated British public opinion by his strong support for the United States. And so he really does find himself in a bit of a limbo. As I say, we'll have to see now how events, again coming out of Istanbul, and how events and how the whole critical issue here, and what will determine the way all of this goes, I think, for so many issues, is what happens in Iraq. If the Iraq situation can be stabilized, and if there is something approaching a sort of representative democratic government can be got moving, and it looks reasonably effective within a relatively short space of time, I think Tony Blair's troubles will not exactly disappear, that they will, as with George Bush, I'm sure, they will be significantly ameliorated. If that doesn't happen, then he is going to remain in trouble.
And that is what we call a very big if. We're at 1-800-423-8255. We're looking at the American ally tonight, the United Kingdom. George Bush is there. You can join the conversation. Brian's calling from Hudson, New Hampshire. Hi, Byron. You're on the air.
Byron, yes.
Byron, got it.
Oh, nice talking to you, gentlemen. And thanks for the opportunity, too.
Good to have you.
In light of what's happened in Turkey in the last 2 weeks with the two bombings, I find it, unbelievable that there are British people out there, calling the United States an evil empire, the president evil, when in fact they should be, you know, looking at bin Laden, the Saddam Husseins, those people. Those are the people that have blood on their hands. And that's who they should be protesting. God knows, they wouldn't be out in the streets protesting against them.
So that picture in London just doesn't add up for you, Byron. Graham Griffith, let me turn that to you. What do you think a protester in the streets in London would have said to that today? How can you be protesting George Bush when you've got Britons dying under quite likely al-Qaeda bombing in Istanbul?
Well, two things. First of all, that argument has been put forward in the papers over the last week or so. Where were these people when Ceausescu visited? Where were these people when Saddam was killing? And the protesters I spoke to, their response to that is basically, it's mixed, but you have some people saying Iraq is the problem for the Iraqis. You have other people who, and I think it has to be said, there are people who really were defending Saddam in this case and saying that Iraqi people were better off under Saddam.
You're saying protesters in the streets in London were defending Saddam?
Absolutely. That by no means means that all of the protesters were painting that picture, but that did exist there, and I did hear that argument from people.
You knew you were in a different country when you heard that. I mean, that is very
absolutely
hard to find in
the
United States.
Well, there was a lot that was a straightforward now. Let me backtrack here a little bit. You know, there was a lot of discussion coming into this protest that these were people who were anti-American, and the leaders of the protest movement were trying hard to distance themselves from an anti-American protest, saying this was all about President Bush. But it has to be said that during the protest, there were a lot of discussions of American foreign policy that certainly predate President Bush. Yugoslavia comes into the picture quite a bit, or has over the last few days. And so it's hard to square what the leaders of the movement are saying with what you're hearing in the discussions.
Gerard Baker, I hear you in Washington.
Yeah, so I just want to try and reassure Byron before he thinks that all Brits have taken leave of their senses. I think Richard had it right earlier when he said, you know, that poll that we saw earlier in the week, which said that I think 15% of the British public thought that the United States was a sort of force for evil in the world. And that's probably, I would think, a very, very high watermark for that kind of view. There has always been a solid, very left-wing, socialist, quite frankly, communist, and some of the organisers of this rally, by the way, in London, we should be very clear about, actually the organisers of this rally, who they are, the Answer Coalition and Stop the War, some of them are avowedly essentially so Marxists. One of the leaders of one of the organisations actually speaks very highly of Kim Jong-il in North Korea. So there has always been...
But surely we don't want to put it all down to that. I mean, it is a broader base of protest than that, is it not?
No, of course it goes beyond that very hard left, but neither should we assume that it is in any way broadly representative of British public opinion to think either that Saddam Hussein, to feel any sympathy with Saddam Hussein, or to feel actually that the United States is somehow a force for evil. There are a lot of very concerned people in Britain who believe, and this is understandable, that what the United States has done it has possibly created the risk of more terrorism and more a greater instability than what the instability that existed before. That is a reasonable position to hold, and that is a position that a lot of British people hold. Very few British people hold the view that the Americans are somehow basically evil.
Stand by, please. Gerard Baker, Richard Heffernan, Graham Griffith in London. We're talking tonight about the American ally. President Bush is there in London. What do you make of the president's appearance in London, of the protests in London? How important is the special relationship between the U.S. and the U.K.? Now we're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the American ally and how firm that alliance is beyond Tony Blair. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. Is this alliance key to battling global terrorism? Could it be provoking global terrorism in some way? What do you make of Bush in London this week, of the protests in London today? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight in the studio by Richard Heffernan. He's professor of government and politics at the Open University outside London. From Washington by Gerard Baker, Washington bureau chief for the Financial Times, and from London by On Point senior producer Graham Griffith, who has been there in the streets today. Terry's calling right now from Boston. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I have two quick points to make, hopefully quick. The first of which is that I tend to believe that actually the relationship as it pertains to the United States and Britain beyond Bush and Blair is solid, but there's probably a solidarity in terms of the folks on both sides of the ocean.
And Terry, let me ask you, is that important to you? Does that matter? Does it make you feel better in the world to feel that solidarity?
You know, going it alone?
Yes.
Yeah, truth be told, it does, because you'd hope that there would be some sort of a check on solely American thinking going through the world, yeah.
Okay, so point one we've got, and your other point?
The other point, and by the way, the solidarity I meant was in terms of kind of a shared misery, by the way, yeah. In terms of how things are moving through the world and how we're making some pretty bad decisions. But at least we've got somebody along there with us to hopefully check some of those decisions.
Okay.
The other point is that I think we in the States would be well served with a popular media that was much less of a bully pulpit that I think that the American media is. The Brits tend to go after or at least question Blair a lot more than we do Bush. And that was basically the second point.
It's a great point, Terry. Thanks very much for calling in. Richard Heffernan, how about it? First of all, has Tony Blair been raked over the coals more fiercely in the UK than George Bush has? Has he been called to account or asked to explain his policies in more detail, more vociferously than President Bush?
Yes. I mean, that's the nature of the British political system. It's a parliamentary adversarial system.
So the parliament that George Bush did not want to sit in the well of this week.
I mean, had Bush given a speech to parliament, he may have been heckled like he was in Canberra. But Blair has to defend his policy, and he has to do so quite vociferously. And has got into a lot of trouble so doing, particularly over the sexing up of the dossier that we heard a lot about in the summer, and we're having an investigation into the death of the scientist.
More anger in Britain, it seems, than in the United States. The weapons of mass destruction never showed up.
I think it's similar. I mean, my view is I think there's a commonality of opinion across the Atlantic. I mean, many of the criticisms that you would find raised in London on the March a day, I have heard in Cambridge across the river from here. Mm-hmm. I think that in many ways, Bush himself is a lightning rod for discontent in Britain. He's not at all very much admired and quite despised. As an individual.
Because?
I think he's widely seen as, you know, a Texan cowboy and someone who's not up to the job.
Don't like Texas cowboys?
I think they do. I don't think they should be the head of the government. That's not my view. I think Bush is pretty adequate head of state as heads of state go. But he is widely disliked in Britain. Mm-hmm. He certainly wouldn't win a primary over there. Blair is admired but not loved, but he's recognised as someone who, you know, is fairly sincere, and people disagree quite strongly with him on the question of Iraq, although his poll ratings in regard to Iraq are quite favourable, although a majority think that the war was unjustified.
Let me ask you this. How much longer is Tony Blair likely to be in office? What will determine that? What about these sagging numbers?
Well, we don't have fixed-term parliaments in the UK. We have to have an election at any time between now and June 2006. At the present time, Blair's poll ratings are not as bad as we may imagine. If an election was held tomorrow, Labour would win with 38% of the vote to the Conservative. The primary opposition have 33 in an opinion poll released 2 days ago.
But would that mean Tony Blair still at the helm?
That would mean that Labour would have a majority of three figures, 122.
But would they keep Tony Blair there?
Yes, but we don't elect our prime minister. The prime minister emerges from the party in Parliament.
But I guess what I'm getting at is within the Labour Party itself, is there opposition to this?
Well, he's having some difficulty. He got a very important bill through yesterday with a majority of 17. He has a majority of 166, so there's a bit of a revolt.
But his own party's not hanging tightly with him.
No, he's having a very difficult time, but he is still leading a party, leading in the opinion polls. Mrs. Thatcher, in her moments of crisis, was down in the polls. Labour is doing very well in the polls, although Blair's personal ratings are low. He has a negative rating of minus 26, I think, at present. The government has a rating of minus 39.
Gerard Baker, let me put the same issue to you. Let's just imagine for a moment that George Bush is re-elected next year. He'll be around for another 5 years. Do you expect that Tony Blair will be around there with him, Gerard Baker?
I think at this point Tony Blair would certainly hope that would be the case. There is, I mean, without getting too much into the kind of soap opera quality of British politics, which unfortunately we have rather a lot of, as you do obviously in this country too, there is a fierce battle really going on between the Prime Minister and the number two, in effect, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown, who desperately wants to be Prime Minister. And Tony Blair has supposedly once in the past, in effect, promised Gordon Brown that he will resign at some point to let him become Prime Minister. There is a really, this is this internal strife in a way that I think is much more threatening to Tony Blair than the poll numbers, the overall situation in the war against terrorism, even some of these big domestic problems on health and the education and the economy that he's got. There is a battle royal really behind the scenes going on between the two most powerful figures in British politics in the Labour Party, and most observers I think who are closer to it than I am over in London would say that this cannot go on. This probably certainly couldn't go on for another 5 years, and so one way or another there's going to be a showdown, and then that's much more about the soap opera. But if Blair, I think Blair would now like to stay on for a good while longer. As Richard said, he doesn't have to have an election until 2006, and he could certainly go on for several years after that, assuming he wins that election.
So George Bush may have his pal on the other side of the pond. Joe's calling from Boston. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I've served with the military throughout the Middle East, and I've also served in Europe. And I just have a quick question and comment on the alliance, the British-American alliance.
Let's hear it, Joe.
The cost of the alliance. Now, with the reasons for going to Iraq, for instance, the weapons of mass destruction and so forth, we have still not found any evidence of such weapons. Now, the attacks in Turkey on British and the cost of British lives, I was wondering if the gentleman could comment a little bit about how that will affect British popular opinion, and how is that going to, I guess, drive up the cost of this U.S.-Britain alliance?
The cost in what terms, Joe? In financial terms?
And for instance, in financial terms specifically, the U.S. is putting down a down payment of over $87 billion. And as the war progresses in Iraq, Britain is going to pay economically as well as we already seen in British lives.
All right. So is that an issue there, Joe? We've got it, and thanks for your call. We've heard a little bit about what you all think of the likely outcome of the bombings in Istanbul today. As I hear you, Gerard and Richard both saying, likely to drive the British perhaps closer to the Bush view of things. But what about the financial question, Richard Heffernan? Is this a drain on the UK now? And what about as George Bush begins to, at least hopes to, pull down U.S. troop numbers next year? Are we likely to see the UK pulling down its troops strength in Iraq as well?
Well, we make the financial commitment that we can in terms of our economic strength and in terms of our troop numbers. And in many ways, treasuries write blank checks in regard to these campaigns. And so the issue is we haven't had the budgetary debate that's happened between the President and the Congress with regard to funding post-war reconstruction in Iraq. It's not a debate in Britain. We tend to write blank checks for this within reason. I think the
blank checks, but smaller checks than the U.S. Treasury.
Much, much smaller checks, although in this rather strong pound now compared to the dollar. But the thing is that I think the key issue is one of sustainability. And I think the problem stems now is one of results. People want to see that the campaign is actually working. And I think with regard to opinion, particularly that 36% who thought that they were disinclined to welcome Bush, I think that we need to disaggregate protesters from the hardcore people who protest irrespective of the issue, and then the British street, so to speak. People are uneasy about the war. They think it's been unsuccessful. They think it may well be counterproductive. And it therefore incumbent upon the principals, both Blair and Bush, to actually demonstrate that something serious has been done and the problem has not been made worse. Winning the war was one thing. Everybody knew that could be done relatively easier.
That is, the first ouster of Saddam's regime.
Yeah, but winning the peace has proved enormously much more difficult than anybody imagined. Of course, those who are against the war are saying, I told you some, sold you so. Some, shamefully, are supporting what they call the Iraqi resistance. Others are just terribly worried. And it's the terribly worried people on the street that the politicians have got to address. That's what's driving Blair's poll ratings down.
The poll numbers. Graham Griffith is our American eyes on that protest today. What impression, what lasting impression did you come away with?
Well, I think you heard one of those terribly worried people with the clip we played earlier in the program. And I think that the professor is exactly right. There's this mix in the crowd. You know, while a week ago I seemed to hear over here that nobody thought this was a good idea, this visit was good for anybody, and maybe it saved for a photo op for President Bush. Now it seems after a couple of days that that the president has won over some people in some ways. He had people he couldn't win beforehand, but the striking thing from today for me as an American is seeing that Tony Blair does have some problems in terms of his popularity on the street. And again, this was not a – who knows how many people this 100,000 or 200,000 represents, but certainly there was enough of a mix there to make you wonder what's happening to his support in this country.
Can't warm the Prime Minister's heart, but there it was today. Graham Griffiths, so many thanks for being on the street today there in London. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Certainly, Tom. Good night.
And Gerard Baker with the Financial Times in Washington, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Richard Heffernan with me in the studio. Thanks so much for coming on.
Been a pleasure.
We are going to end this hour with more sounds from those London streets today, from the anti-Bush, anti-war rally there. Tens of thousands of demonstrators marched through the heart of the city, past the Houses of Parliament and into Trafalgar Square to protest the war in Iraq and the American president's visit. They cried out anti-Bush chants, banged drums, blasted foghorns. The rally culminated with that toppling of a bronze-painted papier-mâché statue of President Bush, a mocking reference to the toppling of Saddam's statue in Baghdad on April 9th, the Bush statue had that tiny Tony Blair tucked in its pocket. Here are sounds and voices from today's protest in London.
It's just the Vietnam War one more time. And if they ask the people in Arabia, you know, all the Arabians, they hate the Western world now, and that's a problem. Of course, America is also a good friend because they're doing a lot of good things, but they're also sometimes stupid, and that's why we're here, because we have to help them and tell them why they're stupid.
Well, I think it's very debatable whether the war is over. The invasion certainly is over. In many people's mind, the war does continue. And it's not just the war in Iraq, it's also the war against terrorism and the conduct of that, which most people find extremely inept and strategically damaging.
As Muslims, we feel very hard that what happened in Iraq is not fair against Muslims. Many thousands of civilians killed by American and the British Army, and really we are against what happened, and not ourselves only, many people from around the world with us and supporting what we did, what we are doing now in London.
We want real peace, real justice in the Middle East. We want the terrorists.
I think George Bush is the terrorist. He's the biggest terrorist of all. And he's got no right to go in a country and tell people what to do. That's what he's doing to the country.
100,000 people are marching in London. We are the future. We are the many. They are the few.
I'm glad to see so many people. And I think there's a lot more people will turn out when the two marches come in. It's a pity that George Bush couldn't actually see it. And I don't think he's going to be allowed to see it, even on video. But he should see it. It just shows the strength of the people's feelings against the war.
55,000 civilians murdered in Iraq in our name. And in the name of democracy and freedom, we remember them. We remember 8,000 civilians.
Sounds from today's protests in London. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.